supposed to be a big man. That feast's out in the garden on Saturdays. Prabhupada would chant Jai Radha Madhava maybe 1974, 1975 he started singing it. Until then he wasn't singing it. Until then he would sing. In the beginning he was singing things like Govinda Jaya Jaya. And then he would just chant Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, and Hare Krishna. And I think it must have been around 75. If you listen to lectures before 75, Prabhupada's not singing to her anymore. And I think he did that up until the end. And one of his godbrothers considered very confidential kirtan Prabhupada was doing in such a public forum, but Prabhupada was singing what he said, that this was a picture of the spiritual world. That it went along with chanting Hare Krishna, complementary to chanting. Such Hare Krishna gives a picture of the spiritual world. That it's provided that we're tuned into the spiritual world. It's like a picture. Picture you can see if you look at it, and if you have the eyes to see it. Otherwise, even you may have a picture, still it's not visible. So, like with chanting Hare Krishna, Jai Radha Madhava, it's a matter of consciousness. Consciousness allows one to perceive something in different ways. Yo mam pashyati sarvatra sarvam cha mai pashyati. When Ramananda Roy met with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that was on their first meeting, and Lord Chaitanya was going on his South Indian tour, and Sarvam Bhattacharya, he told him that he should you should meet with Ramananda Roy. And the reason he told him that was that Ramananda Roy, he was also a government man. So this time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wasn't talking to the king. So why would he then speak to some other lesser official? But still, on Sarvam Bhattacharya's advice, because Sarvam Bhattacharya was saying, actually, I'd already met him before, because Sarvam was advisor to, he was like his prime minister to Maharaj Prataparudra. And if you've ever been to his house is just to the west, on the west wall, adjacent to the west wall. And there's a tunnel, underground tunnel, that goes from his house into the temple. comes up somewhere in the temple. If you wouldn't go outside, if you just go through the temple, through the tunnel. So he had a special entrance. We saw the tunnel with the government. It's probably collapsed by now. And it's either very deep or it's somewhat roundabout, because between there is that Sweta Ganga. Anyhow, so he said that he already had interaction with Ramananda Roy, because Ramananda Roy was in charge of the southern frontier, and he would regularly come and report to the king, and so Sarvam Bhattacharya knew him. And of course, up to that time, Sarvam Bhattacharya was a Mayavadi. But still, he had conversations about spiritual subject matter. Mayavadis also talk about Krishna, but they talk about him with a different conscience, with a different conception in mind. And now, in retrospect, Sarvam Bhattacharya, he recognized that actually he's a great Vaishnava. So since he was made a Vaishnava, now he can recognize that Sri Chaitanya, that Ramananda Roy was a Vaishnava. So he told Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when you're going in South India, then meet with this Ramananda Roy. He's a great devotee. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't go to search him out anywhere. He just went to the river Godavari, which was just near the city of Vidyanagar. I think there's lots of Vidyanagars in India. Anyway, this was another one. South Orissa, but I think Orissa was bigger than it is now, because it was a very powerful state at that time. All the kings were very strict worshippers of Lord Jagannath. So by Jagannath's mercy, they became very, very powerful. So no one could defeat them. Muslims couldn't defeat them. Neither the kings to the south, who were Chola kings. That was their dynasty. They were very, very powerful. Even sometimes, I can feel them really distracted. So just keep track of what we started talking about, which was Ramananda Roy. Because sometimes even Jagannath and Balaram, in order to help fight the wars on their behalf, they would actually ride out in battle. Sometimes Krishna does like that. There's Vishnupur, Van Vishnupur, which was the kingdom of, what was his name, the king, who Srinivasacharya made into a devotee.
Birhambir.
Later, not Birhambir, but after. Because Birhambir, everyone had to be a devotee in the kingdom. So either you chanted 64 rounds, or you had to pack your bags and leave next door. And that was he had 64 rounds was the minimum. That was for the farmers, everyone. And he had soldiers checking up that they were trying to get around. So it was 64 rounds a game. It was the standard in the kingdom. And otherwise he just kicked everyone else out. So here it was a very, very well, very strong Vaishnavas. And they were also attacked, again, probably by Muslims, Mughals. And everyone had to take shelter inside the fort, and they were really outnumbered. And I think after a certain period of a siege, there were like nothing, they thought well, there was really nothing they were going to do, they could do anymore. So, so what they started to do was, the king, they started to chant half kirtan, do a fire yoga, and read Srimad Bhagavatam. They figured there wasn't, they couldn't do anything, they couldn't really defend themselves any further. Anyway, there was, at night, the Muslims, soldiers were attacking again, and there was no more weapons left, no more ammunition, no more food, so they just depended on Krishna. And, but there was one, they had one big cannon that, I don't know, it took like 30 men to move, and so on. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, the enemy started to attack. And all they heard, the inhabitants, and well, by the way, they had this deity that was installed by Krishna, that were installed by Srinivasacharya. And so at night, all they did is just, they all of a sudden started hearing this big cannon going off. And it just kept going on and on and on and on, and nobody knew what was going on. Anyway, when the sun came up, they were all dead. All the Muslim soldiers were all dead. And no one knew what had happened. The only thing was there was this cannon, which just like almost melted from firing so many shots. And no one could say. It was dark. Everyone was either chanting Hare Krishna, they were reading Bhagavatam, or in the yajna. So finally they went to offer prayers to the deities, and opened the deities, and the deities' clothes were all charred and full of gunpowder smoke, and all burnt, and his hands were all burnt and everything. So Krishna does that if you have faith in him. He may not, but if it doesn't matter to you whether he does or not, then he may. And then this is actually recorded. It's a historical record. It's not just a story. It's recorded there that this is what happened. Anyway, that's how the kings in Orissa were powerful. That's why Orissa was bigger, and that's why Ramananda Roy was down there. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met him on the banks of this Godavari River. And because Lord Chaitanya came to bathe, and Ramananda Roy came for his daily bath. And at that time they were discussing. So that discussion went on for quite some time. Lord Chaitanya was asking questions, Ramananda Roy was answering about what the goal of life was. And then at one particular stage, Ramananda Roy started sort of inquiring, and because he could understand that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by his physical appearance, by just the symptoms of his body, also by his bodily beauty and other characteristics, his ecstatic characteristics, that he wasn't an ordinary man, and that he could only be Supreme Personality of God. And so he was a very advanced devotee. So he actually saw in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he saw Radha and Krishna. And it seems that there were two things, because he already told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when I look at you, I'm seeing a blankish boy and a golden colored girl. He says, why is that? And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just sort of brushed him aside. Because Stavara, Jangana, because not only moving things, but unmoving things, great devotees, they see Krishna everywhere. So even in a banana, you're going to see Krishna. So you just as well see him in me. But Ramananda Roy, he wouldn't by that. He understood that there was something, that this was actually, because this was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Lord Chaitanya revealed himself as Radha Krishna. So in other words, there were two different types of darshan going on. One which was actually as a consequence of solely Ramananda Roy's vision, because ultimately Krishna can't hide himself from the devotee. And then the other one was because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then revealed himself, which becomes a different type of darshan. That's called Sakshat Darshan. So when Krishna's actually showing himself. The other is called Ishtadeva Sputi. Sputi. So Sputi is when you, by dint of your own spiritual advancement, you may perceive Krishna's presence everywhere and in so many things, or even in a dream sometimes you may have. But when Krishna comes to show himself to you, that's a different thing. So it's called darshan. Anyway, we're talking about consciousness. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is making this point, is that stavara jangama dekha, that whatever someone, if you have consciousness, then a wall isn't just a wall. The wall is actually, you see your Ishtadeva. You'll see your Ishtadeva in that wall. And there's different ways of seeing. So one way of seeing is the way Krishna describes in the 9th, but mostly in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Anything that's wonderful, just like you look at the yellow wall, what do you think? And you think Srimati Radharani is yellow, Krishna's devotee is yellow, is golden colored. And so that seeing intellectually, that seeing through reasoning, is one type of seeing. And then if actually someone is sufficiently advanced, so when Uddhava looked at the clouds and he saw the color of the clouds, the color of the clouds reminded him of Krishna's complexion. And that then became what's called an udipan. It became an impetus. And then he started to actually see Krishna and he fell into ecstasy. So if their consciousness is more advanced, then it becomes a deeper realization. So the whole idea, therefore, is that if we want to picture the spiritual world, because that's what the topic was, that words give one type of picture. They give a mental image. If we're listening, I don't know, everyone here's chanted Jai Radha Madhava a couple hundred times at least, if not more. So sometimes we don't listen. We just sing the words. That's called chanting. That's called inattentive chanting or offensive chanting. We're chanting it. And then the other is that we're actually really absorbed. We're absorbed in what we're saying. To be absorbed in what one is doing in devotional service is proper execution of devotional service. When you're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, you're absorbed. When you're hearing someone speak, you're absorbed. When you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're absorbed in that, Jai Radha Madhava, whatever. Worshipping the deity, then you're not thinking about going home and going to sleep or what the Mahaprasad is going to taste like. You're absorbed in worshipping the deities and so many other things. And if you're cooking, then you're absorbed in cooking. And if you're playing the flute, then you're absorbed in that as service to Krishna. And as soon as you become distracted, then it becomes questionable whether it's really devotional service at that stage. So the whole idea is actually to have that type of absorption, and then that will give naturally a mental image. And to the degree that a devotee's heart is pure, to that degree that mental image becomes deeper and deeper. The mind never I'm just thinking of a verse, but I can't. The mind is not a instrument for entering into the spiritual platform. You can't become self-realized through meditation. Right? It isn't meditation that makes you self-realized, because the mind is a material thing, and material instruments don't allow you to enter into the spiritual realm. But still, the mind, when it is actually brought under control, when it is used to focus on Krishna, And it helps one actually to advance in Krishna consciousness, to get full benefit of devotional activities, to purify the heart, and to come to the stage of absorption. And when one is absorbed, always absorbed in the devotional activities that one performs, then ultimately, as we say it, Krishna bestows his mercy. So Krishna bestows his mercy means that Shuddha Sattva Vishishatma, that the spiritual energy manifests within the heart. It may spiritualize, it will spiritualize the mind, the heart, the intelligence. And then that's a different instrument than just a mind that's contaminated by the modes of material nature. So here, at least the point I was making is that proper devotional advancement takes place by absorption. That's what purifies the heart and brings one to becoming the object of Krishna's mercy. Without that absorption, then bahujanma koti shravana kirtana, then one may go on chanting Hare Krishna Jaya Radha Madhava for many, many lifetimes. It'll come, but it comes after many lifetimes. And that lifetimes may be 5, it may be 1,000, it may be 1,000,000. So considering that Pantastakoti Satavatsara Sampragamya, that the yogis, they practice for billions of lifetimes, and ultimately, where will they go? They'll come to devotional service, that's all. So it takes a long time. But we don't have a long time. It's, the material world's a pretty miserable place. And our target should be to actually get out of this world as quickly as possible. So I was just listening to a walk Srila Prabhupada was taking, and he was just mentioning this. He was quoting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Devotees shouldn't stay around here in this material world, because there's not much. It's not exactly you're on the heavenly planets, or there's some great enjoyment here, or it's like, Hawaii outside the door or something like that. It's miserable. The weather's bad. The economy's bad. It's a dangerous place. Living is hard. The body's miserable. We're not like demigods living on heavenly planets where there's no enjoyment. It's not even like a good place. There's other places that are better places, but this place is not a good place. But this is a good place to get out of, not a good place to stay. And that's the fortune. But it requires that kind of application. And if we look for it, then you'll see that everywhere Srila Prabhupada in his books, he emphasizes that there's a certain quality. Sometimes, we say chant 6 rounds, follow regulated principles. But Prabhupada emphasizes a certain type of quality if you want the results of those things. Otherwise, results come anyway, but they come at a different speed, at a different pace. But the key is, the best instrument for getting results and for purifying the mind and for really entering, for being able to see the spiritual world. Yes, that's what. So, chanting Hare Krishna, Jaya Radha Madhava, with the right consciousness, with real Krishna consciousness. And Krishna consciousness means beyond one question to sadhana. That when you hear, and then I saw it on two occasions, once in Mayapur, once in Vrindavan. Prabhupada started chanting Jaya Radha Madhava, and then that's as far as he got. Because it's not a picture of the spiritual world, it's the spiritual world. That's the difference. Here's a picture of Radha Gokulananda. I won't use that example. This is another picture of some scenery or something. You can't walk into that picture. Maybe they have computer effects that make you think you can, but you can't. But in spiritual sense, when you chant Hare Krishna, you chant Jaya Radha Madhava, then yes, that shabda, that pure sound vibration, it's not only a picture of the spiritual world, it is the spiritual world, and you can enter into the spiritual world through that. It requires, that's all it requires. It requires the right type of consciousness. And that's what we're all about. We're all about making a change of consciousness. That's a conscious decision that you have to make. It means that we have to be willing to leave our mindset behind and have a new, different type of consciousness. So sometimes our ideas will take who we are and what we are and go like that. But no, we have to be willing to leave all of these other types of mindsets behind them and just become Krishna conscious. And then you can follow in Prabhupada's footsteps. And I mentioned about Srinivasacharya. Sometimes great devotees, they exhibit, or they, to increase other people's faith, they he would sometimes, just like we don't celebrate Holi, but we celebrate sometimes. Sometimes we do Holi, not at that time of the year, otherwise everyone gets pneumonia. We do Holi in the middle of March outside. But some other time, anyway, he would, during Holi festival, sometimes meditate on Holi. And just in that meditation, then from his meditation, he would meditate on holy pastime. And when he came out of meditation, all his clothes were all covered in dye. So it's because by proper consciousness, then we can actually access the transcendental realm. And that way, a Vaishnava lives here and also lives there. That's called Swarup City. Swarup City means one achieves the city or the perfection of having one's Swarup, even though in this body. So one has a dual existence. He lives here, and he also lives there. And then when you give up this body, and you only live there, that's called Vastu City. That means that the substance is only of the spiritual. There's no contact with matter. So that's what Srila Prabhupada wanted us to go back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Ki Jai.